right, hello friends, welcome back. We're at episode 9 now. We've reached the end of the month, so if you are one of my true listeners, you know what that means. We did it last month. We are at our second installment of the Letterboxd series, where we go over the top 4 movies I watched in April. Got my Knicks merch on, hopefully for some good luck with today's episode and the Knicks tonight. Hopefully they don't shit the bed against the Pistons on the night that I'm recording this. But super excited for the episode. I am religiously addicted to Letterboxd. The second I watch a movie, I log it on there, rate, review. It's truly an addiction, and I did just pay for the patron subscription last month, so now we got some fun features with my reviews this month. But first, you know, before we get into it, we have to do our movie recommendation that's not on par with the theme of today's episode. And honestly, not that it's like an underground gem and you might laugh when I say my recommendation, but the OG Star Wars by George Lucas, episode 4, A New Hope, fire. I just recently watched that because I'm trying to rewatch all of the Star Wars movies, especially with the 20th anniversary of Revenge of the Sith coming back in theaters this week. So had to watch it. This is the first time I've watched the original Star Wars from like, it's probably been like 6 years since I watched it for the first time, and I definitely did not appreciate it as much on my first watch, but it's amazing. The storyline, even from the opening sequence with a galaxy far, far away, the score, the memorable characters, just everything about this movie to sum up Star Wars is iconic. George Lucas made one in a million, and it truly, there will be nothing else like it. There will be nothing like Star Wars. It's just amazing. And I just want to sidetrack back to Revenge of the Sith, since I was just talking about that. I did just see Revenge of the Sith in theaters for the 20th anniversary. Theater was packed, expectedly so, so that's why I got my A-list tickets weeks in advance, like when they went on sale. I usually like an aisle seat, that's just me, because I really hate sitting next to people. But I got seats in the middle for me and my guest, shout out D. Will. Right in the middle, perfect shot. Okay, so we get to the movies. I want to say we get there for the trailers, so 20 minutes before the movie is going to start. Theater's already packed out. I'm walking up the stairs with my guest. I look, someone's in our fucking seat. Okay, so we know someone's in our seat. I don't mind saying something. I'm obviously going to say something because the theater's packed out. It's not like we can shift seats. Like, we got these weeks in advance. I want to sit where I got my seat for, right in the middle of the row. So we go to say something, and the kid that's in our seat, one, has the chair fully reclined. If you know you're in someone else's seat, why, especially 20 minutes before the movie, why are you reclining that fully? Like, you know you're probably going to have to get up. Two, when I checked our seats, maybe like an hour before the showtime to see if someone sat next to us, there was one empty seat right next to us. Okay, so when this kid bought his seat, he must have known that every other seat next to him was taken. Why the fuck would you get in the seat, okay? So he doesn't like out himself. We have to say, oh, like you're in our seat, like please get up and move. Doesn't say anything. He has to like re-recline, like bring it back up the seat after getting a bunch of crumbs on it. He has to take his lightsaber and his Lego set that he brought with him to the other seat. Fine. Like, I expected that. I mean, it's Star Wars. If it was a Harry Potter screening, I probably would have worn a cloak or dressed up. So I don't blame you. And then someone explained this to me online when I post this. But then the kid with his lightsaber, the second that Anakin shines his lightsaber as he's about to like kill the younglings, you know what I'm talking about if you've seen Revenge of the Sith, this kid whips out his phone and starts recording himself shine his lightsaber. I don't know what that, like, can someone explain what that means, honestly? Like, why that part? No hate, I'm truly just questioning. I was hating on him when he took our seat, but I'm not hating on this part. I just don't want to get things mixed up. But at the end, another kid said to him, that was so peak when you shine the lightsaber. That was so peak. I don't know if I'm old now. I must be old, but I don't know what the fuck that means. So if someone, when I post this online, can you please explain what peak means? That would be lovely. I got way off topic, but I just wanted to share my Revenge of the Sith movie experience because truly in all my years, no one's ever taken a seat. Not that it's a big deal. It's probably the smallest of deals in the whole world, but I was just flabbergasted to say the least. But it was a great showing. It was great theater. I don't want to say etiquette, but it was fun. Like, people were clapping. I didn't understand what we were clapping at some parts. I guess I'm really new to the whole Star Wars game. But it was fun. Had a good time. Such an experience seeing Revenge of the Sith in theaters. Definitely not the best movie in the franchise, but I would say out of the prequels, that is absolutely the best movie out of those three. But anyway, so I got really sidetracked, but that was our little movie recommendation and I guess some little movie news. For other movie news, Thunderbolts comes out tonight. Hope it's good. The trailers look pretty funny. I like Florence Pugh. We'll see. I mean, Marvel's taken such a downturn, but we'll see. Maybe we're back on the upswing. Who knows? So if anyone's going to see that, really love to hear some comments about it. And I'm definitely going to have to indulge soon. So back to the vibe of today's episode. Like I said, we're going to go over my top four movies of the month. All these movies that I've chosen are 4 stars or higher in my personal rating. Of course, everything is subject to opinion, as I love to say, just so people don't get offended, you know? All right, so let's get into it, guys. Our first movie that we're going to be going over that I watched in the month of April is going to be The Graduate. I gave this movie 4 stars. It is directed by Mike Nichols from 1967, starring Dustin Hoffman. If you are unfamiliar with who Dustin Hoffman is, I would say he might be better known for Kramer vs. Kramer, but also The Graduate right up there. He did a stellar job. So just a little outline of the plot for our friends that aren't aware. A disillusioned college graduate finds himself torn between his older lover and his daughter. Right to the point. First thoughts. I thought, besides the whole torn between his older lover and his daughter part, I thought this movie was very raw and real, especially as a recent college graduate. It is very disheartening stepping out into the world and realizing, oh my God, what am I going to do? Especially when he has his relatives asking him, all right, so what's your next move? What's your next move? The second he graduates, like, I too understand how stressful, anxiety-ridden that whole process is. So I definitely felt a little bit of like a connection between myself and that part of the plot, which I think a lot of people, especially, I mean, obviously, new college graduates can feel. So that was great. That automatically hooked me into the movie. I was set. Now, when we get into the torn between his older lover and her daughter part, that's where this really takes a spin. So, Dustin Hoffman, the main character, he starts having this, a love affair with his parents' older friend. So, someone his parents' age, she's married, she has a daughter, they start having this love affair. And then where does her daughter come into play, you may be wondering? I'm going to go over that right now. So Dustin Hoffman's character is pretty smitten with his older woman. He, you know, wants to get to know her. He wants to chat instead of just getting, you know, down to business all the time like she likes to do. And obviously his parents or her husband are unaware of them having this little love affair. So Dustin Hoffman's parents in the movie and his lover's husband have this idea that he should ask their daughter out on a date. They're both recent. He's a recent college graduate and she is a college student at Berkeley. So she was coming home for the weekend. The parents had an idea that he should ask her out. The mother, the one that he was having an affair with, did not like this. She said, point blank period, do not take my daughter out on a date. Do not. And what did he do? I mean, he kind of had no choice with how he was getting hounded to take this girl out on a date. But That's exactly what he does. He takes her out on a date. At this point, when he's taken her on the date, he's still very much infatuated with her mother. So he tries to plan the worst date possible. He takes her to a gentleman's club. She has an awful time. She's crying. She runs out. He then feels bad and tells her, I didn't want you to like me. My parents made me ask you out, so I tried to have a horrible date. She appreciates the honesty, and then they go on that night to have like an actual real date. And lo and behold, at the end of the night, he is smitten with the daughter. And it's age appropriate. They have a lot in common. She's a Berkeley student. He's a college graduate. And they're old time family friends. So with that, his older lover gets pissed. She is like, you will stay away from my daughter. You are not dating her. He really likes the daughter at this point. Like, he's done with the mother. He is done. So the mother threatens to tell her daughter about their little love affair. Meanwhile, she's married, by the way. Dustin Hoffman's character, he, again, like I said, still really smitten with the daughter. He runs into her house and tells the daughter himself that he was seeing her mom. Because on their date, he mentioned that he was recently seeing an older woman, didn't say who. And then he said the older woman I was seeing was her mom. Obviously, she did not take that well at all. So really the rest of the movie is kind of him out of his mind trying to get her back. Obviously, both of the parents are not comfortable with that. They don't want him around her at all. I will not spoil the ending, but I will just say, just based on that like little outline I gave you guys alone, very riveting, a fun watch, an emotional watch in the sense, like, if anyone can relate to that whole college graduate, the whole really not knowing what life is going to be after you step out of college. It was great. I really liked it. Each shot is purposeful and just tells its own story. I really liked the camera work in this one. There were some shots where the camera was so full, so zoomed in, and some where it was very zoomed out. Did that with a purpose for each part of the scenes, which I liked. Another big part of the camera work that I enjoyed, or just the directing work, I guess, is the whole symbolism with water. Water plays such a big part in this movie in such a subtle way. Very often, Dustin Hoffman's character is floating on his little, I guess, blow-up tube for his parents' pool, or there's this one scene where he's fully submerging himself underwater. So Benjamin either sinks or he floats, and I think that goes a lot deeper than meets the eye. The scene where he's kind of submerging himself in the water, his parents are yapping away. There's another scene where he submerges himself underwater, parents are yapping away, so I think that's on purpose, like a little escape. And then there's a lot of scenes where he's kind of like treading water. So the confidence about his own self and the doubts about his own future factor in his ability to tread water. So again, we have that symbolism, which I really liked. Another part of the movie that I really liked, aside from the cast and I guess the camera work and everything, Mike Nichols, the director, or whoever, loved Simon and Garfunkel, because that was the only music that played throughout this movie. Not that I'm sitting around listening to Simon and Garfunkel on my spare time, but I didn't mind it, and I think it really fit well with the film. So I gave this film 4 out of 5 stars, really enjoyed it. So if you can find yourself kind of relating to the whole unknown sense of being a college graduate, not the whole, you know, torn between your older lover and their daughter part, that's just a little fun plot line. But I think this movie, someone can find almost anything about it to really take away from it. Really good watch. It was on the faster side. I want to say it was less than 2 hours. It doesn't really drag. I like the pacing. So you know what? It was a good watch, and I would say it's a classic. I'm sure other people have said that, but since it's my podcast, I'm saying that. So I enjoyed it. That's our first watch of the month, The Graduate. 4 out of 5 stars. Hope this inspired some of you to just want to watch that. All right, next movie. We have, by Paul Thomas Anderson from 2012, The Master. Last month, I think, for our first installment of the Letterboxd series, we had a Paul Thomas Anderson movie too, There Will Be Blood. So we're back here with The Master. This was another, for my first watch, I would say 4 out of 5 stars. I see when you keep rewatching this movie, it just keeps getting better and better with all the layers. So maybe I will have to go back and rewatch and see what I can dig up. But pretty solid movie for my first watch. So just the plot line before we really get into the thick of it. Freddie, a volatile, heavy drinking veteran who suffers from PTSD, finds some semblance of a family when he stumbles onto the ship of Lancaster Dodd, a charismatic leader of a new religion he forms after World War II. Automatically, when I say the words new religion, what should be going off in your head? Ding, 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 cult. So that kind of grabbed me in, the whole cult plot line. I'm kind of carried away with those, like I love Severance and that whole idea of the plot with the cult. So I was very interested in watching this, especially with all the good reviews I've seen. First of all, the cast was stacked. We have our main character, Joaquin Phoenix, and then our other main character, Lancaster Dodd, who is played by Philip Seymour Hoffman, may he rest his soul. Now, again, Philip Seymour Hoffman, RIP, but one thing about him is that I don't know if it's his acting style, if that was his vibe, but he creeps me the fuck out. Again, like, I'm so sorry because I know he's dead, but his character in The Hunger Games, Plutarch Heavensby, makes my skin crawl. And he really did that as Lancaster Dodd in this movie, the cult leader, made my skin crawl. So phenomenal actor. I also just recently watched him in the third Mission Impossible movie. What did he do? Made my skin crawl. So he's really good at that, playing a creepy motherfucker. So he was the perfect person to take on this role of a cult leader. Same thing with Joaquin Phoenix. Phenomenal actor. I don't even need to say anything. We all know he's a phenomenal actor. He, too, is another one that loves to take on the roles of a creepy motherfucker. So he did a great job as this heavy drinking veteran who really gets absorbed with this whole cult mentality. Loved it. We also had Amy Adams. She was the young wife to Philip Seymour Hoffman's character. Rami Malek was also in this, Jesse Plemons, so pretty good cast. And speaking of casting, Jesse Plemons playing the son of Philip Seymour Hoffman was absolutely perfect. They truly resemble one another, look pretty similar. Maybe they have some hint of, I don't know, maybe they're related some way somehow. They should get an ancestry and figure that out because they really do resemble one another. But anyway, I really like this movie. I definitely think it creeped me out, so that if that was its intention, they did a great job. I really liked the camera work. I loved the plot line and the dialogue. Like when Philip Seymour Hoffman was talking, he is just so captivating with his words. Like he was the perfect person to take on the role of this cult leader. Great job. I also love kind of the full circle moment with Freddie in the beginning of the movie. Like we said, he was this heavy drinking veteran with PTSD. He definitely has some fucking anger issues in the beginning of the film. And it also goes on throughout the course of the film. And at the end, trying not to spoil, but just trying to explain my full circle moment, he kind of lets go of that cult mindset in a way. He really, like, he needed it for a certain period of his life, and then he was able to kind of get away from it and move on and be a little bit of a better version of himself. So I enjoyed that because what's one thing about a cult that we know? They really target, I guess, I don't know if insecure is the word I'm looking for, but they kind of target lost people in a sense. And Joaquin Phoenix's character, Freddie, was the perfect person as a drunk veteran with PTSD from World War II. So perfect person to kind of target to grab into their new cult. And it was amazing. I really liked how it played out. It really got a little dark at some points, like Philip Seymour Hoffman. This was the best part of the movie for me. He called some guy, like some some guy that was kind of instigating him on his methods of his religion and his teachings, and then he called him a pig fuck. And I love that. That was the best part for me. I'm totally going to use the term pig fuck on the road when I have that little hint of road rage every now and then. But again, really enjoyed it. I think that one takeaway from this movie is how at least these men, I'm not saying all men, but these characters can easily bind themselves to one another if they find purpose and comfort. Freddy was lost, coming out of World War II. He found kind of a fake family, a new religion, something to believe in, and therefore he stuck with the Lancaster Dodd cult for quite a while. And also, some would say that's brotherhood, but the fucking relationship between Joaquin Phoenix and Philip Seymour Hoffman's character, there was one word to describe that. I don't care if they're just bros being bros. They were fucking gay for one another. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but they were gay. Like, just call it what it is. They wanted each other. You can see it. It was weird in all the right ways. Obviously, that's not a part of the plot line, but I've read a lot of theories online as well, and I really do agree with them that they were gay for one another. So if you watch it, you let me know what you think, if you think that they got a little something going on between them. But The Master was a 4 out of 5 from me. I'm going to have to rewatch it because a lot of people are giving it 5 out of 5s, and I really want to understand that last star. What am I missing to try and kind of bring this movie to a whole, to a 5-star? So I definitely would recommend, if you want a movie that, with an interesting plot line, draws you in, memorable characters, I guess raw dialogue between characters, it's a great movie. Very original plot. I think anything Paul Thomas Anderson is amazing. I think he's a fantastic director, and this was another great movie from him. I will say, there is no way in hell that I enjoyed this movie as much as I enjoyed There Will Be Blood, but still a great watch from him. So, The Master, our second movie for this little Letterboxd installment, and let's move on. For the third movie we are going over for this month, we have what I have had on my watch list for quite some time, so I was dying to watch this. It is called House by, I might butcher this, Obayashi from 1977. So yes, I know what some of you are thinking. It is indeed a foreign film. I don't want to see any eye rolls or hear any groans because this movie was amazing. It was electric. It was very creative and very original. I really, really enjoyed this. This was a 4.5 out of 5 from me. So, little plot line. Hoping to find a sense of connection to her late mother, Gorgeous, yes, that is the character's name, takes a trip to the countryside to visit her aunt in their ancestral house. She invites 6 of her friends to join her. The girls soon discover there is more to the house than meets the eye. So the film starts pretty optimistic, like with, oh, trying to get a sense of that connection to her late mother, taking a trip to the beautiful Japanese countryside, see her old aunt. Very optimistic, and then it really just takes a dark turn to horror. And it's not horror in a way that's going to like leave you really mentally scarred. It was just so unhinged and creative. It was unhinged imagination in the best way possible. The best way for me to describe this, if you're not getting what I'm saying, is if you were under the influence with a substance in your system watching this movie, you would not have a bad reaction to watching this movie. Like, it would really, it would fit the vibe. It would fit the vibe really well. And you honestly might like it more. If not that I know, wink, from experience, but it's great. It's not going to leave you freaked out or fucked up, but it'll have you thinking in all the right ways, that's for sure. This movie felt like old school horror done right. I've watched a lot of movies in the horror genre from this decade. This one definitely stands out to me as kind of lighthearted in the sense that some of the horror chose to be comedic at times, and then it really does take a dark shift. but I really liked it. I thought the plot line was very original, at least for the time period. I mean, it was almost about 50 years ago it came out. Really enjoyed it. The camera work, I was very impressed with, especially with like the special effects going on. You wouldn't expect that from, not that 1977 was a long time ago. Like, it's not dramatically long ago, but I'm just saying, some of that camera work and some of the editing done, I feel like is something similar that you would see in some horror movies today, with just how they did it. So I definitely do think that this was a landmark film, especially for the horror genre. Very impressed with the editing and camera work. It was very trippy. Something with horror is that you usually see a lot of darker tones to kind of give that eerie and horror-esque effect when watching, but House did not really do that. Like, it was pretty vibrant with the colors, which I really liked. The special effects were really in your face. I mean, obviously, there were some eerie elements to it. I mean, it's a horror movie, obviously, but it wasn't boring. It was just fun. Like, that's the best way to describe this. This was creativity at its finest. The production design was beautiful as well. You're just transported right to the countryside of Japan. Amazing. Really liked it. Really liked the whole vibe of the old school ancestral house. And like I said, this movie probably paved the way for so many horror movies of its kind. Like the classic going to your aunt that you haven't seen in decades, old ancestral house. Like, yeah, it's going to be fucking creepy and something's going to go down. But this is why I feel like House is a staple, because it really set the way for other movies like this, like Cabin in the Woods. I can't say Amityville Horror, that's different, but there are a lot of movies with a creepy house. And you know what? Maybe House is probably the first of its kind. It was amazing. I would definitely say it's an underrated gem. I really enjoyed it. I know it's not going to be for everyone, but I thought it was a great movie, and especially a staple for the horror genre. I'm a big horror girl, so I thought it was very important to touch on as one of the top movies of this month. Definitely give it a watch. It's very short. It's only 88 minutes, so less than an hour and a half, but they do so much in 88 minutes. It doesn't feel rushed. The pacing isn't weird. It's just great, and it really, like, once you see that shift from, like, lighthearted, optimistic to fucking horror, it's great. It really is a work of art, and I think House, I mean, it's almost 50 years later, and I'm talking about how good this is. Obviously, House is a staple, and I'm just sure it's going to stay that way for a long time. Really enjoyed it. If you're into horror in the slightest of bits, definitely check that out. Time for the final movie. Let's do a little drum roll to bring it in. Final movie of the month, my favorite, 5 out of 5 stars, The Departed by Martin Scorsese from 2006. Phenomenal. This was a masterpiece. I do not care if I am not in the majority with this one. I see it really, like, you love it or you hate it. I loved this movie. Anything Martin Scorsese starring Leonardo DiCaprio and Matt Damon's going to be a banger, but this really just blew me away, knocked my socks off. So, plot line. To take down South Boston's Irish Mafia, the police send one of their own to infiltrate the underworld, not realizing the syndicate has done likewise. While an undercover cop carries favor with the mob's kingpin, a career criminal rises through the police ranks. Both sides soon discover there is a mole amongst them. Amazing plot. If that doesn't just grab you from what I just said, I don't know what will. Stellar cast, for starters, just to like really get into it. Leonardo DiCaprio, Matt Damon, Jack Nicholson. Our trifecta right there. Phenomenal. The one thing I didn't like, but you're obviously going to get this with South Boston, that fucking accent. I don't know if it's because I got that New York blood in me, but makes my ears hurt, that Boston accent. So that's like the one negative I can say about this movie, but obviously they did a great job with their accents. So that plot line grabbed me from the beginning. I'm not even going to go into the cinematography really, because that's not what grabbed me. What grabbed me is that plot. And honestly, while that plot's phenomenal, I don't think it would have been as amazing if it wasn't Leonardo DiCaprio as our undercover cop, Matt Damon as our career criminal who is rising through the police ranks, and then we have Jack Nicholson as our Irish mafia kingpin. So good. They blew me away. Not that they weren't going to do that in any movie that they're in, but still amazing. The dialogue and the character dynamics was awesome. The interactions between Leonardo DiCaprio with Jack Nicholson as he's trying to infiltrate that mafia, and then we have Matt Damon and his interactions with the police force. So good. There is an enormous amount of tension in this movie. I'm pretty sure that's on purpose from Martin Scorsese to try and create anxiety from the audience watching. But once there's that shift where both the police and the Irish mafia realize they have a mole amongst them, your heart is just pounding. The adrenaline gets going. It's great. You're just waiting to see the whole time what's going to happen, who's going to discover who's going to get caught first. So good. The ending, definitely wasn't expecting that. Of course, we get a little plot twist, so I'm not going to ruin that for anyone and spoil what happens. But just that tension with Matt Damon and Leonardo DiCaprio kind of working in close quarters, and yet both of them don't know who they are, in terms of Matt Damon has no clue who the undercover cop is, which is Leonardo DiCaprio, and Leonardo DiCaprio has no clue who the mole in the police force is. But they know each other. It's so good. The Departed might be one of the best crime movies I've seen. I thought this plot was so original. Who doesn't love a movie with, I guess, the FBI or a mafia? I personally love a movie like that. So this had me by the chokehold right from the get-go, just from reading about it. I loved it. I know this movie's been out for almost 20 years, but if you haven't seen it, you must. Like, if there's one movie from this episode I'm going to beg you to watch, it's The Departed. It was phenomenal. Just a few things more I want to say about The Departed before we wrap up, since this is our last movie for the episode. Obviously, there's nothing to say about Leonardo DiCaprio and his acting career. Like, no matter if he's a creepy dude, he is one of, if not the best in Hollywood. He really blew me away with this performance, because I feel like, at least like in Wolf of Wall Street, even though this came after The Departed, he's really good at having like that tough guy persona. He did it so well in this movie. He's the guy who's trying to infiltrate the mafia, his initiation kind of into the mafia to gain their trust. The acting was just phenomenal. Really had my heart racing through that. I can't see anyone else as this character, honestly. He just fits so well with it. Matt Damon. Oh my God. Mark Wahlberg. I didn't even mention Mark Wahlberg. I'm sorry, guys. Yes, Matt Damon and Mark Wahlberg, those Massachusetts natives, gave solid performance. Nicholson did a great job. He's another one that does a great job playing a creepy motherfucker. So I really, really enjoyed him as our mafia kingpin. I think Jack Nicholson does his best roles when he's kind of the antagonist. The Shining, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, great job. So I really love him in roles of this. But seriously, like I really do like to focus on the camera work and cinematography when talking about movies. But The Departed, what grabs you in is like the heart of this film is just the characters and the character development. You really feel for the characters. You feel on both sides. You get that emotional grab towards both of them, meaning, I mean, you kind of get like backstories on both of them. And then as the lies, the betrayal, the sacrifice, how far it goes, it just gets you into a chokehold. It was entertaining. It was suspenseful at its best. Amazing crime drama. I think The Departed expands on, I guess, like the mafia and the CIA trying to catch them in so many ways. It was just such a solid film. Tremendous storytelling. I mean, probably why Martin Scorsese won an Oscar for this, but The Departed blew my socks off, and I think it will knock your socks off as well if you watch. So that's how we're going to leave off. I love The Departed. Love the director. Love the cast. It was phenomenal. Very engaging. building up curiosity and adrenaline at its finest. Loved it. The end. All right, so guys, thanks so much for listening to episode 9. Sorry if I spoke a little fast, but I got really passionate about The Departed there. So thanks for tuning back in. I really would love to do a little recap on our Hunger Games. So maybe in a few episodes we'll do a Catching Fire one, since we had the OG Hunger Games a few weeks ago. Also would love to do a breakdown of Revenge of the Sith, maybe with a special guest, who knows, and then we'll get into like some Indiana Jones episodes. And then in a few weeks, something I've been doing, like my mission, no pun intended, once you realize what I'm talking about, I've been watching all the Mission Impossible movies for the first time. So when the final movie comes out, prepared to talk about it, have a whole episode on that. So that's just what we got going for the month of May, I'm thinking. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. Hope you listen to some other episodes while you're at it. And to leave off, enjoy and go to the movies, everyone.